headlines this hour. Britain calls for full Israeli cooperation with a probe into the use of EU passports by assassins of a Hamas official in Dubai. The leader of a military junta that has toppled Niger's president becomes the country's acting head of state. And the Ivory Coast's security forces opened fire on opposition protesters, killing at least two people and wounding more than a dozen.
It's 2:30 in the morning here in the capital, Tehran. You're watching another bulletin of world news here on Press TV.
Thanks for joining us. Britain's foreign secretary has urged full Israeli cooperation with an official international probe into the assassination of a top Hamas official in the UAE.
That was transparent and clear. I obviously went through with the foreign minister the importance of the investigation that the prime minister has announced, and the importance that we attach to Israel cooperating with that investigation.
Well, Miliband promised the European Union will get to the bottom of the murder of Mahmoud El-Mabhouh in Dubai last month. This came soon after an EU foreign minister's meeting in Brussels condemned the use of European passports by El-Mabhouh's assassins. Israel's foreign minister, who also attended the meeting, denied Tel Aviv's link to the assassination. But Dubai's police say new evidence has implicated Israel in El-Mabhouh's murder. They've already released photographs of the 11 suspects for being behind the murder. The suspects were carrying fake passports from Britain, Germany, Ireland and France. Berlin has yet to independently condemn the assassins' faking of its national passports.
Hundreds of Palestinians have staged a rally in Gaza to condemn Israel's decision to include two shrines in the occupied West Bank to its list of heritage sites. The angry supporters of Islamic Jihad movement chanted slogans against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and burnt the Israeli flag. This after Netanyahu announced a plan to include the Cave of the Patriarchs in Al-Khalil and Rachel's Tomb in Bethlehem to the list of around 150 sites that Israel plans to restore. The move sparked outrage in the occupied West Bank town of Al-Khalil or Hebron, where Israeli troops clashed with Palestinians. Both Hamas and Fatah Party have denounced the Israeli move as yet another setback to the peace talks. The UN has said it worried about the heightened tensions resulting from the decision. The world body says the sites are of historic and religious significance, not only to Judaism, but also to Islam and Christianity. Well, meanwhile, French President Nicolas Sarkozy has called for rapid resumption of the Middle East peace talks. The French president has pledged to work for the creation of a modern and viable Palestinian state with Jerusalem al-Quds as its capital. Sarkozy said the Palestinian state should be drawn up according to the 1967 borders. He also said any solution to the Middle East crisis must include a discussion on the fate of the Palestinian refugees. Sarkozy made the remarks following a meeting with acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas in Paris.
Now, Lebanese forces leader Samir Jaja has lashed out at Hezbollah leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah over his recent speech on Hezbollah's anniversary of martyred leaders. Nasrallah has threatened to hit Israel's infrastructure if it launches an attack against Lebanon.
Lebanese forces leader Samir Jaja held a press conference which he dedicated to commenting on the latest speech of Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. Jaja implied that Hezbollah has put Lebanon in danger, saying the movement was involved in regional face-offs that do not concern the country.
The conflict is now focused on Iran and also the West and Israel. However, all those confronting Iran are considering Hezbollah as Iran's military wing in Lebanon.
This view, however, appears not to be shared by other members of the March 14 alliance. Prime Minister Saad Hariri has repeatedly stated that Hezbollah was a recognized component of Lebanon. In his latest statement, Hariri said that Israeli anti-Hezbollah rhetoric was merely aimed at finding a new excuse to launch a war on Lebanon.
Jaja looked like he's increasingly being isolated in the fact that most March 14th members decided to go to Syria or decided to bury a hatchet and take a centrist view. Jaja clearly is very comfortable in this, what he perceives as a principled view of politics.
The situation in Lebanon has shifted in Hezbollah's favor recently, as the cabinet manifesto does recognize the movement's right to defend and liberate the country.
Hezbollah is now comfortable. I think for Hezbollah, the chips have fallen into the right places, be they with the, if you will, defection, quote-unquote, of William Blatt, with the newfound centrism of Prime Minister Hariri, and the low tone of March 14th, I think, all of these factors, and of course, let's not forget the rapprochement, the Saudi-Syrian rapprochement, and the Syrian international community rapprochement.
Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah stated in his latest speech that Hezbollah would target Israeli infrastructure in retaliation to any attack on Lebanese infrastructure. Hezbollah insists that such an approach, which points to growing military strength of the movement, will delay or avert a new Israeli war on Lebanon.
Hezbollah's military success against Israel and its alliances with Christian leaders like Michel Aoun have both served to boost the movement's popularity and to promote its image of being non-extremist. However, Hezbollah's traditional rivals don't seem to be happy with the situation and claim that the movement is dragging Lebanon into conflicts beyond its borders, despite Israeli history of launching military campaigns against Lebanon. Ali Risk, Press TV, Beirut.
More than 40 people have been arrested as part of an investigation into an alleged military plot to bring down the Turkish government. Among the detainees are former and current military commanders. Previous detentions were linked to the Ergenekon secularist network accused of a 2003 plot to overthrow the ruling government. Some reports say the new round of arrests may be linked to the Balyoz or Sledgehammer coup plot, possibly merging Balyoz and Ergenekon. Last year, a Turkish newspaper said it had obtained a copy of an army document detailing a plan to discredit the AK Party government. There have been reports that the detainees were allegedly have the same signatures as those found on documents associated with the Balyoz plan.
Well, the leader of a military junta that toppled Niger's president last week has become the country's interim president. A military order says Major Salu Djibu will function as acting head of state and government during the political transition. The junta has also said that it would name a prime minister and government to help oversee the transition. This is a day after the junta leaders promised a visiting international delegation, a return to democracy and a new constitution. They said that they would involve political groups and civil society to set up the new constitution. On Thursday, the army removed President Mamadou Tanja, who became unpopular ever since he changed the constitution to remain in power beyond a 10-year limit. Well, to tell us more about the situation in Niger, we're joined by Nia Akweta. He's with the African Policy. Thanks for joining us, sir. First of all, to begin with, what are the reasons behind this coup? Because Africa does have a history of coups.
That's very true, but you know, people from in Africa on the grassroots have actually been pushing for democracy. So for the last 10 years, democracy has been spreading in Africa despite our history of coups. Now, to Niger specifically, President Tanja finished his 10 years and he wanted to stay longer. He dissolved the parliament. He dissolved the constitutional court. He held a fraudulent referendum in which 90% of the people did not vote. So he was very unpopular inside the country. And the army therefore moved in. The interesting thing is that all the international bodies, from the UN to France to the United States to the African Union, they have condemned the coup. On the other hand, the Niger citizens themselves have been applauding the coup. They say they've been liberated, and that's because President Tanja was so unpopular and stayed in power unconstitutionally.
So how similar do you think today's situation is to the coup in 1999 that led to elections?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Some of the same people who are in the leadership of this coup were in the leadership of the previous coup. So some have argued that because of that, they might hand over like they did before. But you know, there are other examples in Africa, as you referred to, where soldiers come the second time, like Ghana, where when Jerry Rawlings came the second time, he did not leave. And so I actually think that the regional bodies are doing the right thing. As you pointed out, there's been a delegation to go see the junta. And they are putting a lot of pressure on the one hand, and on the other hand saying, we will give you every help to write a good constitution and then hand over to civilians. So I think since the coup, the international community is doing the right thing. If I might add one more thing, before the coup, they were not doing the right thing. I mean, countries like the US were making deals with the Tangier administration to fight terrorists in the Sahara, especially the dissension with the Tuaregs. Then you have France, who was coveting the uranium in Niger. So they coddled the administration. And now I'm glad that they are putting pressure on the soldiers to hand over.
Now, just how much support do you think the new regime has to continue with their coup and produce a sustainable government and constitution, as the coup leader has pronounced himself the interim president?
I think actually they will get a lot of support and help if they keep their word. As I mentioned, in terms of overall support, the international community condemned the coup, but Nigerians themselves welcome it. But where the international community and the Nigerian citizens see eye to eye is that they want a new constitution written, free and fair elections held, and the government turned over to an elected group of representatives as fast as possible. So the short answer to you is, they have a lot of support and goodwill, so long as they are moving towards handing over to civilians. If they falter, or if it turns out that they are being deceptive, then the people inside as well as the international community will turn against them.
Now, very briefly, if you can answer, what do you think will be the fate of Mamadou Tandja and the rest of his cabinet members?
Frankly, my quick take is that nothing much will be done to them, because one of the coup leaders said, remember that he is a former general, he's an old soldier like us, so we wanted him out of power, but we are not going to harm him. And some of the other ministers have already been released. So I think that so far it looks like no harm will come to them. But we know coup leaders who change their minds quickly. And after all, these are soldiers whose profession is to kill people. So we are keeping our fingers crossed. But so far, I think they are safe.
All right. Many thanks there to Nia Ekweta, African policy analyst, joining us from Washington.
Well, moving on now, security forces in the Ivory Coast have opened fire on opposition protesters, killing at least two of them and wounding more than 15 others. The incident took place in the western town of Daloa. The military has also killed at least five protesters at a rally in Ganoa on Friday. Demonstrators are protesting President Laurent Gbagbo's sacking of the government and the Electoral Commission. Prime Minister Guillaume Soro now says he will present his new cabinet on Tuesday. The Independent Electoral Commission is also set to be reconstituted. Ivory Coast is now certain to miss a March deadline to hold presidential polls, which are already 4.5 years overdue.
The Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, has called for closer ties among independent nations. Ahmadinejad says he considers multilateral relations as a prudent strategy which can help independent countries resist pressures by what he calls the world's bullies. Speaking in a meeting with the Congolese parliament speaker, Iran's president said the bullying powers use all possible means, including economic sanctions and wars, to impede the independent nations' progress. Ahmadinejad says he believes imperialism and capitalism are doomed to extinction.
Iran's foreign minister Manuchehr Motaki says regional problems would not be resolved until foreign forces leave the area. Motaki said foreign forces claim to be fighting terrorism in the region, and at the same time, extremists say they are fighting against the occupiers of their countries. He said regional issues can be resolved through a regional approach when foreign forces leave the region. Motaki made the comments during a meeting with the Kenyan foreign minister in Tehran. Motaki also met with Sudan's ambassador to Iran, Suleiman Abdel Tawab Azzain. Azzain praised Iran's role in helping resolve the Darfur crisis.
Iran's interior minister says Tehran's regional strategy is to provide stability and security for the Middle East. Mostafa Mohammad Najjar says intervention of foreign forces in Afghanistan has made the country an epicenter for international crimes, including drug dealing and human trafficking. Najjar has underlined that the presence of the U.S. in Iraq, Afghanistan and Pakistan is the root cause of a great deal of problems for the people of these countries. The Iranian minister made the remarks during a meeting with Japan's ambassador to Tehran, Akio Shirota. The Japanese ambassador, for his part, described Iran as a key element to peace and stability in the region.
Iran says it is still ready to purchase from abroad the fuel it needs for a research reactor in Tehran. Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, Ali Asghar Sultaniyeh, in a letter has asked the agency to fulfill its duty and facilitate the fuel purchase. He says Iran is also ready to exchange its low-enriched uranium with a higher-enriched fuel. Iran wants a simultaneous exchange conducted on its own soil. Tehran Research Reactor requires some 120 kilograms of uranium enriched up to 20% to provide life-saving medical isotopes.
Iran says it has no intention to pull out of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Ali Akbar Salehi, says remaining a signatory to the NPT is good for Iran and the entire world. Salehi also says Tehran plans to build two more uranium enrichment plants in the new Iranian year, which begins on March 21st. He says Iran needs 20,000 megawatts of electricity to meet its domestic energy needs. Meanwhile, Foreign Ministry spokesman Ramin Mehmanparast has dismissed as illogical the West's new proposal over Tehran's research reactor. The United States, Russia and France asked Iran to shut down its reactor in Tehran and purchase medical isotopes from abroad instead.
Well, you're watching World News here on Press TV. These are the headlines this hour. Britain calls for full Israeli cooperation with a probe into the use of EU passports by assassins of a Hamas official in Dubai. The leader of a military junta that has toppled Niger's president becomes the country's acting head of state. And the Ivory Coast security forces open fire on opposition protesters, killing at least two people and wounding more than a dozen.